So, what makes a good poll? In the past few weeks, there's been conflicting information put out on the state of the presidential race in Florida. Some surveys have Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump ahead by several points, while others have Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton up in the state. Even the same polling companies are releasing conflicting surveys one after the other. So can these polls be trusted? And what do they really tell us about how the American electorate is feeling? That's ahead on It's About Florida. Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter. The Republican National Convention is underway in Cleveland, and Donald Trump is the party's presidential nominee. Now that the primaries are over, Trump and his Democratic challenger, Hillary Clinton, are working to woo voters to their respective sides. There's a large amount of educated guessing going on about who will eventually win the presidency, and the polling firms appear to often have their fingers on the pulse about how Americans are feeling about their candidates. Or do they? Tori Whitley spoke with Quinnipiac Polling Institute Director Tim Malloy in June, shortly after the organization released a survey showing Hillary Clinton leading Donald Trump in Florida.
According to the poll, Clinton has an 8-point lead now in Florida over Trump. What do you think this means for Clinton in Florida going forward, since it's the largest swing state?
This is a very significant event for Hillary Clinton. She surged to an 8-point lead in Florida, the largest of the swing states. She made up ground in Ohio, and she's dead even in Pennsylvania. So this is a good survey for Clinton and a very bad one for Trump, because he needs to win Florida.
And why do you think he needs to win Florida?
Well, it's the most electoral votes of the three. Historically, nobody's won the presidency since the 60s without winning at least two of the key states, either Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, two of those three. So it's also a state where he has a home and a state that he said he's going to win. So it's a tough survey for Trump with regard to Florida, at least.
Where do you think this boost came from in Florida? Which voters?
His support among men, Trump's support among men, dropped in Florida. It was 49-36 in the positive back in May. It's 45-41 now. And Clinton's lead among women has grown significantly in the state of Florida. So it's sort of a double whammy. Not only that, Trump has worse negative favorability ratings in the state of Florida. So something has happened. I can't tell you what. I mean, with Donald Trump, it could be any number of things.
What do you think it might be?
We don't do what we think. We do what the numbers tell us. I can tell you this. By a margin of 2-1, Florida voters believe that Clinton is better prepared to be president. By a large margin, they think she has higher moral standards. By a large margin, they think she's more intelligent. However, they think Trump is more honest and trustworthy. They find Clinton more inspiring than Trump, although they find Trump a slightly stronger leader. But on the big things, like who would handle an international crisis, who should be in charge of nuclear weapons, Hillary Clinton comes out way, way ahead. So those are important markers for Clinton. On the big, almost existential issues, Hillary Clinton is way ahead of Trump. Yeah, you'd rather have a barbecue with him, but you don't want him touching the nuclear codes. In this acid test, Pennsylvania voters, Ohio voters, Florida voters especially, say Hillary Clinton is smarter, more morally grounded, better equipped to handle the what-ifs, the use of nuclear weapons, the management of an international crisis. It's a toss-up on leadership, but in the broad overview, Trump is coming up short and losing ground with men in Florida, and that has got to be a red flag.
That was Tori Whitley speaking to Quinnipiac Polling Institute Director Tim Malloy. But earlier this month, Quinnipiac released another poll showing Donald Trump leading Clinton. Other polls released around the same time had opposite results. So which is right? We caught up with political scientist Lance DeHaven Smith on the phone in Jacksonville. He studies political polls and polling. Mr. DeHaven Smith, welcome to It's About Florida.
I'm glad to be here.
I want to talk about this issue of polls. In the past week, we have seen a couple of very conflicting polls out of different organizations. Some say Hillary Clinton is up in Florida. Some say Donald Trump is up in Florida. Some say, you know, Marco Rubio has a blowout lead over all of his challengers. Others say, you know, that lead isn't as big. What's going on here?
Well, survey research is about sampling from a larger population and drawing conclusions from the sample about the population. The key is to have an accurate sample, and that has become more and more difficult. It used to be you did what was called random digit dialing. You got a phone book that had the numbers listed in order instead of the names, and you selected the numbers randomly, and you could do a telephone interview, and it was quite easy to get a random sample in that way. Now, though, people don't have landlines. Many don't. They have cell phones, and the numbers are not necessarily published. There are also surveys conducted on the Internet. What we're finding is that the Internet is actually turning out to be more accurate than the cell phone surveys, because people are, they have what's called a response bias. When they're talking to another individual, they may be reluctant to say they're supporting Trump. And so if you look at the telephone surveys against the Internet surveys, you see that Trump does much better in the Internet surveys than in the standard telephone surveys. And the reason for that is apparently people are reluctant to say they support Trump, even though they do. When they're talking to a person, they're embarrassed, but when they're talking to a computer, they're not embarrassed. They just give their normal answer.
You know, we always talk about a sample size and trying to eliminate the sample bias in surveys such as these. How do you go about doing that, especially, you know, in something like an Internet survey or the phone call?
Well, you first of all try to make it as random as possible. With the Internet survey, you send out random emails and ask for a response, but you also look at the demographics, the number of males and females and Republicans and registered Republicans and Democrats and so on, and balance your sample against that. That can be misleading, though. The problem there is that people will register for a political party or register as independents when they actually have, a different orientation. They go back to the supervisor of elections and change their party of registration, but you don't know that when you do the survey. So there's a lot of things that can get in the way. It's just become a lot, much more difficult to get a random sample of the population. And think about this. Do you sample likely voters? Do you sample registered voters? Do you sample a separate sample for each party? There's a lot of choices to make, and each of those choices can create a bias in the survey. So it's not for nothing that you're getting all these variations in survey findings. Another thing to keep in mind is people tend to think of the public as the public, as if there were a collective consciousness out there that was somewhat liberal or somewhat conservative or somewhat Democratic or somewhat Republican. But the reality is there is a kaleidoscope of political orientations, just very numerous. And some people feel strongly, some people don't feel strongly, some people are going to vote, some people are going to stay home. It's very difficult to include all those permutations. Again, the key is random sampling. And with random sampling, you can 400 respondents is adequate to get a very good slant, a very good picture of the opinion on the issues, but it's very difficult to get a random sample.
So how do you go about, you know, trying to decipher that? I remember, I think it was the 2008 election, there was a lot of confusion. You know, the polls said one thing, and yet the electorate, you know, went another way, and people ended up doing some head scratching. You sort of see that kind of going on now, even with, you know, trying to get a good random sample. What are some of the techniques that pollsters use to try and do that?
Well, the random sample is pretty simple. If you get a list of phone numbers, of cell phone numbers, you just pick every third or fourth one or however many you have to get a total sample size. If you have the internet, you go for emails, and again, you try to randomly sample the email addresses. And you can buy these. But it's still, you know, it's still hit or miss because it has become so complex in terms of people's responses and their likelihood of voting. It's very difficult to decide who to select. What most people do when they're trying to figure this out is average all the samples, all the surveys findings. And so you see these sites that will take, you know, the average from four or five surveys and try to say what that means. That's a pretty good way to do it. I mean, you get the kind of balance out the samples that are skewed, but it's still very tentative because, frankly, some of the outliers may be accurate. It's just, you know, if you average the internet surveys with the in-person telephone surveys, you're basically, you know, downplaying the people who are more likely to be candid because you're averaging those against the people who are less likely to be candid because they're in a telephone survey.
What about with respect to the questions and how the questions are being asked? You know, in journalism, we say, you know, don't ask any questions that could end in yes or no. Try to ask open-ended questions. And I guess the same could go for polling, right? Isn't there something that says, you know, beware of how you ask the question because you can get completely different answers?
Change the wording just slightly and you can get a totally different response. If you ask them, you know, are you planning to vote for Hillary Clinton or I'm blocking on the name.
Donald Trump.
Or Donald Trump, you'll get one response. If you add in the parties, the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, you'll get a different response. If you ask, who are you sure you're going to vote for, as opposed to asking who do you plan to vote for, you get a different response. So it's a very subjective, and you have to be very careful about it. But it would be better if we did open-ended surveys, but we don't. We do the yes and no. As you said, journalists don't want a yes or no answer. The reality would be much more realistic if we asked open-ended questions. There was a survey done in the early 1960s by a scholar named Philip Converse, and he wanted to know whether people who said they were conservative, what they meant by that, or if they were liberal. And he did a survey, and he asked who they were going to vote for. It was in the presidential election, and no matter what they said, he asked them why they were voting for this candidate. And he thought he'd find people saying, well, I'm a liberal, and this candidate's a liberal, I'm a conservative, this candidate's a conservative. But what he found instead was people would say, well, this fellow is like me. He's a farmer, or he's got a background in military. And they had very little content when it came to liberal or conservative. Most people, frankly, voted on whether the times were good or bad. And they would say, I'm going to vote. Why? Well, times are bad. I'm going to throw the rascals out. So what we know is when we do open-ended surveys, we find out that people's views are usually a good deal more crude and less informed than we normally think about. So we, in a normal survey, you do the survey with an either-or answer, and then you come up and you interpret that as saying people like Donald Trump, or they're swaying to him, or people like Hillary Clinton, they're rallying to her cause. But the reality is they're not. It's not issue-driven very often. It is more the character of the candidates, whether the people like them or not. You know, as crazy as it sounds, if you want to be elected president, you've got to like people. And if you survey people and ask them who they like, you're going to get a fairly more accurate account of who they're going to vote for than if you ask them who they're going to vote for.
So that's interesting, right? Because right now we see so many surveys that say Hillary Clinton has a high unfavorable rating, or Donald Trump has a high unfavorable, you know, ranking. And you seem to be saying, well, likability might be a better metric than asking the question, who are you going to vote for?
Yes. Think back to the 1992 election that Bill Clinton won. Now, understand, people think he beat George H.W. Bush, but there was a third-party candidate, Ross Perot, who gave the election to Clinton. But the one thing you have to admit about Clinton is he liked people, maybe to a fault. he liked women, but, I mean, he liked people. And that went a long way, and it still does. It's kind of amazing. Because he was impeached. He wasn't convicted, but he was impeached by the House, and he had a lot of scandals around him. And yet, he's a much beloved ex-president. Hillary Clinton, frankly, the biggest problem she's got is she screams when she talks. It's just off-putting. And I think if she were a man, it wouldn't make as much difference, but for some reason it strikes people as jarring. And then there are all these scandals and everything following her. So most people could not tell you about the scandals. They couldn't tell you in any detail about I'm sure that people who follow this could, but the average American couldn't tell you anything about the nature of the charges levied against her, but they could tell you whether they trust her or not. And it's sort of a gut level thing. They do pay attention to what's going on among the political elite and how they're discussing things, but they don't get all the details. And so you get a fairly vague sense of trust, sense of likability, but that drives the bulk of it. Even if you think about the advertising, what they're trying to do is tear down each other's character. They're saying, look at this person, they said this. This other person said this. They're not saying, this person's a liberal, this person's a conservative. It's too abstract. Think about selling tennis shoes. Okay, nobody would, go out and say, I've got a tennis shoe and it's got this great rubber in the soles and it's just all made just wonderfully. No, they would have a very excellent professional basketball player wearing the tennis shoes and would say, this is what you should get. And that's sort of how elections go. You don't say this candidate has these issues that are so important. You say this candidate is in this arena. This candidate's this kind of person. This candidate is like you, or this candidate is not like you. So it's much more complicated than the surveys tend to suggest, although the variation in the survey results do hint at the complexity of the electorate.
So if polls right now, are so difficult to interpret, one says one thing, one says another, how much use do we actually have for them? And, how can we trust them? How do we know what is a good poll versus, you know, what is a bad poll?
Well, you have some checks on that when they tell you how they drew their sample. But the reality is that some of the surveys, some of the polls, are run by partisan think tanks and nonprofits, and they are slanted. There's a reason for that, and it is that if people think somebody's going to win, you know, if you come out and say, this survey shows that Hillary Clinton's 5 points ahead of Donald Trump, that will encourage people who are going to vote for Hillary Clinton or are standing, you know, on the fence about it, to go over for Hillary. They want to back a winner. If these surveys come out close to the election, they could have a biasing effect. They absolutely can. People will vote for the people they think is going to win. And people will stay home. You know, if they were going to vote for Trump, but he's showing low in the polls, they just stay home. Remember the 2000 election? The polls, this was the closest election in American history. And the polls were still open in the Big Bend area, Pensacola area, when the results had already been announced by the television stations, the network, saying that Gore had won. And so people, said, well, there's no point in going to the polls. And many stayed home, and that affected the outcome. So it's not just that people are having different methodologies and different techniques and different questions. It is that part of what is going on is that you have partisan polling.
If I'm looking at a poll and I'm not familiar with it, how do I know if this poll came from a legitimate group or if it's a partisan poll? I know I get a ton of them every single day. But how do you discern between, is it a partisan poll or, is it something else?
Well, you can look at how they drew the sample. Was it a random sample collected by random digi-dialing for cell phones? Was it an internet sample? If it was an internet sample, how did they deal with the tendency for some people to answer those polls and other people's not? Which would tend to generally mean they balance it against the demographic backgrounds that the census provides and that we know are accurate. But the truth of the matter is, consumer, beware. You're on your own, and you'd be smart to treat these surveys with a good bit of skepticism. Even the best ones are early, and there's a complicated electorate, and they simplify that. They drill down to the common denominator, and they overlook the extent to which people are unaware or ignorant or indifferent to the election. And people, you ask people a question, they'll give you an answer. Who are you going to vote for? They may not have any desire to vote, no plans to vote, but they will tell you, I'm going to vote for so-and-so. Well, how do you rule that out? It's really kind of hilarious if you think about it. we put an enormous amount of emphasis on polls, and we track them, and the candidates respond to them. They say, I'm winning in the polls, I'm doing great, and so on. But the polls are fuzzy at best. There's not a thing out there to measure. There's not an objective electorate that's going to vote and so on. I mean, the reality is they're going to change their minds. They're shifting all the time. They don't have clear reasons for who they're voting for, aside from maybe the character they see. It's a very fuzzy thing you're trying to look at. And you can focus in on it in a whole multitude of ways, and that's what we see happening. So my attitude would be, don't put a lot of stock in polls. Now, as the election approaches, you get more, and more accurate. And the polls run by the major media are accurate. I mean, they're as accurate as you're going to get. They are careful about it, and they have no interest in coming up with a false conclusion. But it's still, you know, the electorate is so complicated and so diffuse and so scattered and multi-centered that it's really impossible to measure it with a survey. And when we get really close to the election, like 2 days away, and we're running surveys, you'll get a pretty good read on where everybody is. But, you know, the exit surveys, which are done after the people vote, people coming out of the voting stations and they're asked, who'd you vote for? Even those are questionable. You mentioned the 2008 election. The polls were showing one thing, the exit polls, and the results were showing another thing. The questions were raised about whether, you know, were the voting machines rigged? And you really don't know. The exit polls, you have the same problem. People may vote for somebody, but they're reluctant to admit it when they're asked about it, and so you get a skewed result, systematically skewed, that you're not anticipating. So it's a buyer beware. That's the best way I would say it.
What is the value, given that polls have increasingly become so fuzzy, do they even have value anymore?
They don't have much value in terms of tracking the electorate. They have a lot of value in terms of manipulating voting behavior. What's going on with survey research, the people who pay for this on a big scale are the candidates. They are running surveys every night, and they're very concerned about being accurate. They're not releasing their results because they don't want people to know if their candidate is doing poorly, and they know if they say they're doing well that people will question whether they're being biased or not. But these are the surveys that are accurate, and it would be what they teach. You know, essentially what they're telling you how to do is how to raise questions and negative campaigns. And, you know, they also have focus groups. This is all designed to figure out how to market a candidate. It's very similar to marketing a product. So we have, you know, essentially very large sciences that are geared to figuring out how to manipulate people's voting choices. And the survey research is mainly going for that. The stuff we're picking up as a mass public and a journalist is really the kind of back, you know, it's kind of trivial, really.
Well, Mr. DeHaven Smith, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, it was nice. I'm glad I got to talk about that.
Thanks to political scientist Lance DeHaven Smith. You're listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more issues impacting our state.